From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. Washington State is home to some of the world's biggest international companies, Microsoft, Starbucks, and Amazon, just to name a few. And for many of them, the future is China. That's not our only tie. Recently, a Chinese movie, Finding Mr. Right, Beijing Meets Seattle, became a smash hit in China, and it's resulted in a huge surge at travel agencies for tours. Joining us is Christy Heim. She's the founder of Context China, a 10-month-old online newspaper. They cover the relationship between China and the Pacific Northwest, and she's written for the Seattle Times and the Asian Wall Street Journal. She helps direct the UW Confucius Institute of the State of Washington, and she also serves as vice chair of the Washington State China Relations Council. Christy, thanks for stopping by.
Great to be here.
I got to find out about this movie, Finding Mr. Right, Beijing Meets Seattle. What's it about? How does it portray Seattle? And why is it served as a tourist magnet?
Well, it's a blockbuster in China now, and it shows the fascination that China has had with Sleepless in Seattle, the movie from a couple of decades ago. And this movie is a new rom-com, which has a young woman trying to find herself, leaving Beijing and coming to Seattle, basically to have a baby here and then introduce the baby as her American born child with U.S. citizenship. But the real story is how she discovers a new lifestyle and quality of life here in Seattle. Although I have to admit, some of the scenes are filmed in Vancouver, which I noticed myself.
Again, Vancouver again.
But it's very interesting because it's really the upshot is it's drawn so much interest in Seattle on the part of Chinese tourists. They just want to come here, see the beautiful scenes, experience the amazing quality of life. So I think for that reason, it's great for Seattle.
You know, Sleepless in Seattle, a lot of people went to the Pike Place Market after they saw that movie if they hadn't been here before because there were a lot of key scenes there. Are there any kind of key scenes set in Seattle where if we are wandering around and we see flocks of Chinese tourists, we'll know it has something to do with this blockbuster movie?
I think there's definitely scenes at the Pike Place Market. There's a scene from a marina, which I think was very captivating, and I wonder if that's going to bring some people to the lakeshore, the marinas, to experience what life might be like, you know, on a boat, on a beautiful lake, on a sunny day like today.
Can the Finding Mr. Right, Beijing Meets Seattle tours be far behind if they're not there already? You at Context China have covered the Pacific Northwest Company's foray into China. And you were telling us that some of the companies are doing some interesting things in trying to localize their products for China. Could you give some examples?
Exactly. That's a great question. Well, particularly in the case of Starbucks, I mean, you know, enormous global brand, great customer service. But how do they succeed in a market like China where people aren't even used to drinking coffee? Well, what they've found is they've managed to strike a balance between their global brand and local culture. So what they've done is introduce products that are kind of uniquely Asian or Chinese, the black sesame green tea frappuccino, for example, and also really making some of their cafes look more like a Chinese setting with Chinese cultural elements. And then they're training coffee masters. Some of their Chinese baristas and partners are training to really understand, you know, the coffee house culture, where coffee came from. I think they're doing a pretty good job so far.
Now, what are the main impediments that still remain for businesses that want to do work in China?
Well, you know, certainly there are numerous challenges. So, you know, among them, of course, for our tech companies, intellectual property protection remains pretty dismal. I think that's changing. But for now, you know, that's still a big issue. And I think, you know, the state-owned enterprises and the government support for Chinese champions has also become a challenge. So if you're in an industry where, you know, the Chinese have targeted that as a strategic industry, you may find yourself with an emerging competitor who has government backing and you don't. So that's a big challenge, too.
And maybe stealing some of your patent ideas, your intellectual property, and using them against you.
Quite possibly.
You know, there's a kind of a startling story about Chip Starnes, co-founder of a Florida medical supply company, running a plant in Beijing where he was held captive at that plant for a week before he was finally released. That's got to be of concern if you're going to be doing a business in China. You're going to be held captive.
Exactly. I mean, I think that was an incredible story. But I guess on the ground in China, it wasn't quite as shocking just because, you know, people are so concerned with their jobs, especially in the manufacturing industry. Work is hard to come by, and people have been used to, you know, bosses just walking away and not paying them their salary. So I think, you know, he felt the brunt of that pressure that has been for years, you know, coming. And a lot of the laborers, you know, are migrant laborers, not that well educated or skilled. So for them, you know, holding a job is really critical. But can you imagine just, you know, not being able to leave your company for 6 days and the local officials not intervening at all on your behalf? I mean, that's got to be scary for anyone who's really not familiar with what happens in China.
Yeah, and on the other side, pretty scary to think that your boss might leave and not pay you what you're owed. Apparently, he announced some small layoffs and then a panic kind of ensued because all the other workers thought they would be laid off.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, the 100 workers or so that were left there thought that they were going to be laid off too. So they got into a panic and just took things into their own hands, feeling that was the only way they were going to get any justice.
You just got back from China, as I understand it, and we continually read about the horrible air quality in Beijing. Tell us what it's like when you were there.
Well, it had a lot of variation. I think some of the days it was really terrible. It reached, you know, the pollution level where people have to stay inside. You know, there's a lot of particles in the air. It was in the, you know, 300s, which is very bad, very unhealthy. One of the days I was there, it wasn't quite so bad. It seemed terrible to me. But my friend who lives in Beijing said, this is like California weather. We can actually go outside. We can walk around. We can see a tiny, tiny patch of blue sky. I think, though, in general, the Beijing air is a huge issue. And what I hear is that a lot of people are leaving Beijing, especially if they have a chance to live in another city in China. It's just the traffic congestion is horrible. The air has been, you know, just intolerable. So at this point, people are packing up and leaving if they can.
Well, there's the old saying, when you live in a smelly factory town, that's the aroma of success. That's the aroma of prosperity. But has the negative impact of this horrible air pollution begun to kick in? Are the Chinese taking steps to curb it in manufacturing or in automobiles?
They are taking steps to curb it. That's a great question because, you know, right now you have to strike a balance between, you know, having productive industries, employing people, and then not jeopardizing the health of people. And I think it's a tipping point where it's really started to jeopardize health in a dangerously unstable way. So now the government is taking steps to clean up the environment. It's just going to take some time, particularly in Beijing. It's surrounded by polluting cities. So it's kind of the air gets trapped. But I've seen a lot of positive signs that they're recognizing this problem. And so I think, you know, change is coming. It's just a question of how fast.
Tomorrow is the fifth round of U.S.-China strategic and economic dialogue in Washington, D.C. Anything big expected to come out of these meetings?
I think it's good that they're having these meetings, and the leaders are fairly new to each other. So, you know, China just had a very large leadership change in March. And, you know, Obama has a new Treasury Secretary and a new Secretary of State. So these people are kind of meeting each other for the first time. So I don't expect earth-shattering changes. But I think what's really good is that both sides recognize they need to form a different kind of relationship, one that is more collaborative, more win-win instead of very competitive. So I think that's good. I think you'll see them talk about cybersecurity. What they really need to do is establish some sort of standard that they agree to. So I'm hopeful, but I don't think you'll see anything earth-shattering.
We've had a few Chinese journalists come through the station at various times, and some of the stories they've told us have been rather alarming when we think of press freedom in China. What's your experience of that? Is there sufficient press freedom in China?
It's definitely not sufficient. I know a lot of very brave and courageous journalists, and they're working very hard to tell stories that, and I think what they work hard to tell is domestic stories, stories that affect people's health, the melamine scandals, the air quality, the politics. They want to tell the stories that affect people's lives in China. And I think they're still under a lot of challenges with censorship. But things are long-term, I think, looking good. You have a lot more media. You have great, you know, online bloggers, microbloggers. And so information cannot be hidden anymore, even in China.
Christy Heim is with the online newspaper called Context China, and it focuses on the relationship between China and the Pacific Northwest. Christy, thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you so much.